Welcome to the Heathrow results for the 6 months to the 30th of June 2021. Throughout the call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there'll be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present John Holland-Kay, Chief Executive Officer, Javier Echave, Chief Financial Officer, and Sally Ding, Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance. Please begin your meeting.
Well, hello and welcome to everyone who's dialed in to join our Half 1 2021 results presentation. I'm John Holland-Kay, the Chief Executive at Heathrow Airport, and joining me virtually are Javier Echave, our CFO, and Sally Ding, Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance. This is normally one of the highlights of the year when we get together to present our results to you, and I'm so disappointed that we have to do it virtually once again. But I hope that before long, we'll be able to get our lives back and be able to do this in person once more. Today, we'll present our key operational and strategic highlights, including progress on our three-phase plan in response to COVID-19, a review of our financial position, which I'll ask Javier to take us through, and then we'll conclude by taking your questions. First, let me start by saying that I hope you and your families are keeping safe and well. A lot has happened since we last spoke at the end of April when I presented our quarter one results. And for those of you in the UK, I hope you've been able to take advantage of the gradual easing of restrictions over the past couple of months. We were obviously delighted to welcome more passengers back to Heathrow on the 17th of May when travel restrictions were lifted. However, we recognise the need to rebuild confidence in travel, so we're working hard to ensure that passengers feel safe and secure in returning to the airport. And I hope that we can welcome many of you back to Heathrow over the summer and the rest of the year. Turning to slide 4, we'll give an overview of our key metrics. To help set the context of the significant impact COVID's had on our business, we've shown our latest results against half one 2020 and also half one 2019. Despite an increase in passengers in the last 3 months, only 3.85 million passengers traveled through Heathrow in the first half of the year. That's a 90% decline versus 2019. Our actions to optimize revenue, such as maximizing cargo movements and targeted retail offerings, meant that revenue was down 76% versus 2019. In terms of our costs, we're seeing the benefits of the early and decisive actions that we took last year, with our operating costs down 31% versus 2019. As a result, our adjusted EBITDA fell to a loss of £33 million in the period. In terms of our financial resilience, our liquidity remains extremely strong at £4.8 billion and reflects the £1.4 billion of debt that we raised in the first 6 months of the year. And I'd like to thank all of you for continuing to support Heathrow on these transactions. Given the continued uncertainty around traffic recovery, we revised our traffic outlook in June to 21.5 million passengers. Under this forecast, headroom to our Heathrow Finance interest cover ratio covenant is limited, so we are seeking a waiver of the covenant for financial year 2021. All things considered, the steps we've taken over the past 16 months to protect jobs and the health of the business leave us well positioned as restrictions are lifted and international travel restarts. We have a very strong team in place, and we look forward to winning the recovery, investing for the future, and delivering our vision of giving passengers the best airport service in the world. Turning to slide 5 for a look at our strategic priorities. Our focus remains on operating a safe and resilient operation at lower cost, while continuing to deliver excellent service to our passengers. We're supporting the government's efforts to restart international travel safely, and are undertaking trials with our airline partners to provide the government with the evidence that travelers' vaccination status can be quickly and easily checked away from the border, and that would allow travelers from the EU and the US to safely enter the UK. From a regulatory perspective, we continue to engage with the CAA on the assumptions and approach to the next price control, H7, which is due to start in 2022, and we remain active in pushing for sustainability and removing carbon from the aviation sector. Given that climate change is a global issue, we will support the government in its efforts to secure an international agreement for net zero aviation by the end of next year. And finally, although it may not be our immediate priority, we know that expanding Heathrow in the right way and at the right time will be essential to fulfilling the government's ambition of global driven while meeting our environmental commitments. So I'll start the business update on slide 7 by showing the progress on our business protection plan. As an international transport hub, the safety of our passengers and colleagues remains our number one priority. Although legal restrictions in the UK were lifted on the 19th of July, all COVID-19 safety measures remain in place at the airport, including face coverings, and we continue to encourage social distancing. We're delighted that our COVID-safe program has been recognized externally by the Airports Council International and the CAA, and that in May, Heathrow was upgraded to the prestigious 4-star COVID-19 airport safety ranking by Skytrax, the highest achieved by a UK airport. Finally, since last quarter, we further expanded our testing facilities with a new market-leading partnership offering tests at a competitive price across all terminals. This provides capacity for over 400,000 tests per month, one of the largest private testing facilities in the UK. If we turn to slide 8 for a look into the results of our management actions to protect the business. As you can see, average monthly cash burn reduced by over 50% in the first half of the year. This reflects our actions to reduce operating costs and capital expenditure to the minimum level required to allow the airport to operate safely and securely. On the interest side, we're seeing the benefit of our swap reprofiling program, which has reduced interest paid in 2021 and 2022. And in parallel, our liquidity position increased to £4.8 billion, representing a significant improvement compared to the position at the start of the pandemic. On slide 9, we look at our winning the recovery phase and the recent steps taken to restart international travel safely. After several months of restrictions, international travel resumed on the 17th of May via the traffic light system. The news that fully vaccinated UK residents are no longer required to isolate on their return home from amber list countries is a very positive step on the path to recovery. Extending this to fully vaccinated passengers of all nationalities is a real opportunity to get Britain's economic recovery off the ground. And we believe that replacing PCR testing with cheaper lateral flow testing will remove the cost barrier to travel for many passengers and further stimulate the UK's recovery. On slide 10, you can see how the different policies in place in the UK compared to the EU means that the UK is lagging behind our European rivals. In absolute terms, passenger numbers at each European hub in the first half of this year are running at nearly double Heathrow's 3.85 million, with much of this recovery occurring in the last 2 months. In terms of cargo, volumes through Heathrow are still 18% below 2019 levels in comparison to Schiphol and Frankfurt, where volumes are now 9% up on 2019. With almost all air cargo carried in the hold of passenger planes and the UK's travel restrictions continuing to limit trade compared to other European hub airports. This puts us at a significant competitive disadvantage as a country. And continuing these restrictions will only hinder the UK's recovery and discourage the trade, tourism and investments that are key to rebuilding Britain's economy. Slide 11 shows the impressive progress on the vaccine rollout in many countries and how the UK traffic has been affected by the government restrictions. Since the start of the year, we've seen huge progress on vaccinations. The success and speed of the rollout of the UK vaccination program, with over 88% of adults having received at least one dose, should give confidence that travel can resume more meaningfully. However, as you can see on the second chart, UK routes with the US are still at only 8% compared to 2019, whereas European routes with the US have recovered to nearly 50% of pre-pandemic levels, despite the vaccination rates being around 68% in both regions. Britain has won the vaccine recovery race. We are losing and falling behind in the economic recovery that should follow it. And there's a huge opportunity here for us to rebuild our trading routes by opening up to doubly jabbed passengers from the EU and the United States. And there's no reason why that can't happen from the end of July. Following the restart of international travel, slide 12 shows how our current operations are ready to welcome passengers back. We've taken prudent steps to recommence operations in Terminal 3 and reopened the second runway. This provides additional capacity and ensures passengers can travel safely and securely through Heathrow in the coming months. In addition, Terminal 4 is now operating as a dedicated facility for arrivals from red list countries. We continue to support the Border Force in carrying out their checks and implementing adequate resourcing, technologies and processes to align with their current levels of demand. And finally, in terms of our retailers, we've seen stores reopening since late May after easing lockdown restrictions, and we now have nearly 80% of outlets open across Terminal 2 and Terminal 5. And now on slide 13, we'll move on to the third phase of our plan, which is to build back better. We are updating Heathrow 2.0, our industry-leading plan for sustainable leadership, and that's to reflect the significant progress we've made and to increase the focus on carbon. We will share the detail of our revised strategy later in 2021. Carbon remains an existential issue for us, and we are using our convening power to push for a global commitment to net zero by 2050 at the ICAO General Assembly in September next year, and a plan to achieve it by switching to sustainable aviation fuel. I was delighted that this was adopted in the G7 communique, and we are building momentum for this for COP26 in November. The UK government has acknowledged that aviation growth is compatible with meeting its legally binding net zero commitments, and we welcome its Jet Zero Aviation consultation. The key measures that are needed are a progressive mandate to increase the proportion of sustainable aviation fuels that are blended with kerosene to at least 50% by 2050, and a price stability mechanism. These two measures alone will open up hundreds of billions of dollars of investment needed to decarbonize global aviation. We are grateful for the leadership shown by airlines using Heathrow, 70% of whom have committed to net zero by 2050, and over 60% have committed to 10% sustainable aviation fuels by 2030. Finally, we're delighted that Heathrow became the first major UK airport to integrate sustainable aviation fuels into its operation, providing the proof of concept that a lower carbon fuel can be used at a major airport. We are considering how we might include a discount for the use of SAF in our aeronautical charges, and will provide further details later this year. Now, if we turn to slide 14 for a regulatory update, let me start with just an update on the timing. We submitted our updated revised business plan in June, and under its current timetable, the CAA is planning to publish its initial proposals in the autumn with a final decision over the winter for implementation in 2022. However we look at it, this is going to be a very difficult settlement. Lower passenger numbers and a higher cost of capital mean that after 8 years of falling prices, there will be a step up in charges. And given the huge impact of COVID on investors, financeability will be a bigger issue than it has ever been, especially the need to generate cash flow in the early years. Our update assesses two scenarios, a full and a partial recovery of COVID losses. We believe that if the CAA can build confidence that investors will get a recovery of the RAB by suspending regulatory depreciation for 2020 and 2021, that will allow regulatory depreciation to be deferred from H7 to H8 and will incentivize capital investment to improve passenger experience. These measures would lead to average charges in H7 of around £30. Alternatively, if the CAA chooses not to suspend regulatory depreciation, the only logical approach for investors is to depreciate as quickly as possible, minimize capital expenditure to minimize future exposure, and the greater risk would mean even higher cost of capital. This would mean an average charge of over £40 and lower investment in passenger service. We believe a lower charge is the better outcome for everyone, but can only be achieved if regulatory depreciation is suspended for 2020 and 2021. And our submission is a public document, which is available on the H7 update website, and you can find a link to that through our release this morning. So I'll now hand over to Javier to talk about our financial performance.
Thank you, John, and welcome to everyone. I hope you and your families are all keeping well and safe. And let me share with you an overview of our key financial performance starting on slide 16. As John highlighted, our financial performance continues to be affected by the reduced number of passengers traveling through Heathrow. And in the first half of 2021, revenue declined by 51% when compared with the same period of 2020, with both aeronautical and retail revenue suffering the most of the decline. In the second quarter, in isolation, we saw an increase versus the first quarter of 2020, reflecting the recent recovery of passengers numbers due to the reopening of international travel from mid-May. Our costs were down by 22%, reflecting the benefit of our decisive management actions to reduce our cost base implemented over the second part of 2020 and in 2021. Altogether, revenue and cost means that the adjusted EBITDA declined by 115% to losses of 33 million over the first 6 months of 2021. Capital expenditure decreased by around 67% to only 96 million as we continue to constrain investment to protect our liquidity and cash position whilst ensuring that we are operating safely and securely at any time. Turning to our debt metrics, we have managed to keep our net debt well under control to protect our financial metrics, and we saw our net debt at the end of June broadly flat to the position as of December 2020. In terms of regulatory asset base, our closing RAB increased by approximately 450 million, reflecting the combination of the immediate £300 million of interim adjustment from our regulator, the Civil Aviation Authority, as well as a high inflation over the first 6 months of the year. At the end of June, we continue benefiting from very strong liquidity position with £4.8 billion in cash at the Heathrow Finance consolidated group level, which provides sufficient funds to meet all our obligations well into 2025 under our current base case traffic forecast, or until October 2022 in the very extreme case of no revenues whatsoever. Let's now take a closer look at some of the details, starting with revenue on slide 17. As I mentioned earlier, overall revenue for the period declined by 51% versus 2020 to almost £50 million. Our largest source of income, aeronautical revenue, declined by 57% to £169 million. And obviously, that's a reflection of the reduction in passenger numbers and fewer aircraft movements. In terms of retail, revenue declined by 60% to almost £60 million, driven by reduced passenger numbers, as well as the reflection of the government's abolition of VAT from 1st of January 2021 and the restrictions that we have seen for non-essential shopping in the first 6 months of 2021. Obviously, it's extremely disappointing that the Treasury has baked in a competitive disadvantage for the UK tourism by making this the only country in Europe not to offer a tax-free shopping. While we are waiting for traffic to return to normal levels, we continue to look for opportunities to optimize our revenue, particularly by continue working with members of Team Heathrow through contractual negotiations with concessionaires, targeted promotions, as well as a number of non-essential retailers offering a pre-order and collect service. Finally, other revenue decreased by 28% to 120 million, demonstrating relative resilience in other regulated charges, as well as in property income. Now moving on to slide 18 for an update on our cost base. We continue to see the annualized benefit of our cost initiatives rapidly implemented in 2020. And when compared against the first half of 2019, we have reduced our operating costs by 31% or 35% when business rates are excluded. If I go cost by cost, first one, our employment costs declined by 34% versus 2019 and reflects the organizational restructure and the government's furlough scheme benefits. The reduction in operational, maintenance, utilities, and other costs were primarily driven by operational efficiencies as well as renegotiation with supplier contracts and stopping all non-essential costs. Despite a significant 90% reduction in traffic versus 2019, government business rates have remained flat compared to 2019, evidencing limited government support for the well-impacted travel sector. While COVID regulations have been lifted across the UK, The travel industry is now the only sector that continue facing ongoing restrictions to trade. As long as the government continue to inhibit a full recovery for travel firms, they must provide ongoing financial support, including an extension to the furlough scheme beyond September and business rates relief. Finally, and part of our cost savings was offset by business resilient cost, including cost associated with the ramp-up of our operation, as John has mentioned. Continuing with our strict focus on cash flows on page 19, it's remarkable that over the period, our net debt was broadly flat at £13.2 billion. And obviously, we benefited from limiting CapEx spend. And as discussed earlier, the reprofiling of some of the swap portfolio last year, minimizing interest paid in the period. Although we have reported an EBITDA loss of £33 million for the first 6 months of the year, our net cash flow from operations was positive £177 million, driven by the positive working capital movement as the operating cost prepayment we made at the end of last year unwinds this year, 2021. Obviously, no dividends to ultimate shareholders were paid, and that will remain the case until we return to a healthier financing position and our Hydro Finance gearing is back below 87.5%, as previously indicated. Taking into account all other outflows in the period, net debt increased by just £45 million in 2021. Turning to slide 20 for a recap of what we have done to strengthen our financial resilience. As you may know, we have followed the same three phases on our financing plan as with the rest of our business plan across the organization. First of all, has been around protecting the business, which in financial terms translates to liquidity and debt covenants. In addition to the actions to protect the business on OPEX, revenue, and CAPEX already mentioned, we further strengthen our liquidity position with an additional £1.4 billion of debt raise for this year. In late 2020, we also reprofiled some of our swap portfolio using some of the liquidity injected in the regulated group, and we have since extended that program and now forecast a reduction in interest paid of approximately £360 million in 2021 and £260 million in 2022. In terms of winning the recovery, we remain committed to restoring our credit metrics in the medium term, and the combination of the actions to protect the business were well received by our credit rating agencies. In March, both Standard & Poor's and Fitch affirmed our credit ratings as a result, and that gives us confidence to keep focusing on our last phase of the plan, Build Back Better. On this regard, as we look ahead to build and recovery from the crisis, ESG financing will play a critical role, even more critical than it is today. Over the last few years, we have accelerated engagement with investors and lenders on ESG, but we can just recognize the rapid developments in debt capital markets in the area of sustainability. So we are working and we will continue working to ensure our aspirations around the decarbonization of aviation are also appropriately built into our financing platform, and hopefully we'll provide an update in the months to come. Moving to slide 21, we continue to monitor, obviously, headroom to key ratios under our revised traffic forecast. While the headroom to gearing trigger events at Class A and Class B remains comfortable, the headroom to covenant at Hydro Finance is more limited, but we remain comfortable with the position. As a reminder, the Hydro Finance gearing covenant was revised up to 93.5% in 2021, following the waiver you kindly secure for us in July 2020. Additionally, with a £600 million capital injection secured in 2020 and the interim £300 million of RAP adjustment provided by the CAA, the gearing covenant in 2021 is protected and gives an additional circa 5 percentage points headroom. If I move to interest cover ratio, a forecasting and trigger events have occurred in relation to the historical interest cover ratio for both Class A and Class B debt for the 2020 financial year. And as a result, a distribution lockup is in place within Hydro SP, providing additional protection to Hydro SP's creditors. Despite this, Hydro Finance Limited entity holds a healthy liquidity position in excess of £300 million And as a reminder, no debt maturities are phased until 2024. This distribution lockup will remain in place during 2021, despite forecasted ICR for senior and junior debt expected to be above the trigger event levels for the year ended 31st December 2021. But we anticipate to be out of the distribution lockup by mid-2022 under our base case scenario. Finally, I'm moving on to slide 22 to conclude the financial section of the presentation with our outlook. So as you will know, our updated traffic forecast is 21.5 million passengers in 2021, which represents a 2.7% decline compared to 2020, but still a dramatic 73% decline versus 2019. This base case traffic forecast was detailed in our June investor report and have since then seen no changes. The outlook for our adjusted EBITDA performance in 2021 also remains consistent with the guidance published in this investor report. Under the base scenario, no covenant breaches are forecast across the wider group. However, the headroom to our Heathrow Finance interest cover ratio covenant level is expected to be limited given ongoing pressures on our cash flow generation. We have stress tested the base case due to uncertainty in passenger recovery under a severe but plausible case of 13 million passengers in 2021, which is the lower end of the range indicated in our Q1 results. Under this downside scenario, the Heathrow Finance interest cover ratio would breach, but there are no other forecast breaches across the group. As John mentioned at the start, we have therefore taken the prudent and proactive step to address this downside risk by requesting a waiver of the Heathrow Finance ICR covenant for financial year 2021. Obviously, I'm very grateful that at time of launch, more than 70% of our creditors had indicated their intention to support, and you can see all the details in the information that we published last week as part of the launch of the process. This support, your support for the waiver proposal will enable us to focus on the operational delivery of passenger numbers recovery in the coming months and to the benefit of all creditors. With that, I conclude the financial review. But before I hand over to John, I would like to share some personal news. If everything goes to plan, my wife Helene and I will bless by the arrival of a baby girl in early September. And as you can imagine, I'm very excited with the news. I'm very keen to enjoy this time off and fulfill my expanded family duties. So I will take a few weeks off in September. To ensure continuity with our investor community, I have asked Sally Ding, our exceptional Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance, to act up temporarily as the CFO while I am away. And obviously, I would like to take the opportunity first to thank Sally for taking this expanded responsibilities. I'm sure you will agree that you are left in extremely capable hands, but also my gratitude to John and the rest of the board for really backing our inclusive culture with tangible action. I very much appreciate, John, your support through this important time for me and the family, and I will be back with you investors as part of our Q3 results in October. So with now, John, back to you for closing comments. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you, Javier. Very, very exciting news. So just to sum up how we're feeling at the moment, there are no doubt we will still have storms ahead of us, and we are still in the middle of a global pandemic. But I think that we are through the worst of this crisis. So we are moving our business out of the protect the business phase that we've been in for the last 16 months and moving on to win the recovery. As we rebuild our business, we will focus on passenger service and on giving passengers the best airport service in the world. We'll do that through our people, building a strong and diverse culture, making Heathrow a great place to work. And with the right regulatory settlement, we will transform customer service so that passengers, bags, planes, and cargo flow quickly and smoothly through Heathrow. We'll continue to become more efficient and have a more flexible cost base, building on the progress we've made in the last 18 months. And finally, we will grow sustainably, not just building back to 2019 passenger numbers, but expanding the UK's hub airport. The last 18 months has shown how only a hub airport can support regular long-haul flights, how extra capacity can provide value for customers with lower prices from competition and choice between airlines, and how vulnerable the UK's trading routes are if we become dependent on overseas hubs that can close borders at any time. The next decade will see huge progress on decarbonising aviation, and Heathrow will continue to take a leading role so that we protect the benefits of aviation for future generations. So we'll now take questions from participants, and I'll hand you back to our call manager to coordinate that. Thank you.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, you have two options. If you're dialed in on your phone, you can do so by dialing 01 on your telephone keypad now to join the queue. Once your name is announced, you can ask your question. And if you find your question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel. And if you're logged into the WebEx via the WebEx audio, you can use the raise hand button, which is to the right of your name on the WebEx screen, and we will announce your name and open your line as mentioned before. So once again, that's 01 on the phones or the raise hand button to the right of your name on the WebEx. And we've got one question on the phone so far. That's from the line of Paul Duke of Fidelity. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, thank you very much for the call, and thank you for the presentation. It was very helpful, as always. Three questions, if I may. Would you be able to talk a bit more about what you've seen in the recovery since kind of the fully vaccination, not having to quarantine on the amber list, and then also in recent weeks since the so-called Freedom Day? And then also just a clarification on the assumptions on the chart where you look at your passenger base and say, I think it's 16% doesn't have to quarantine. Just some colour around kind of what's behind that chart and would be great. On the business rate side, would you just be able to give an update on kind of how the conversations are going with government? Obviously, it's been a long time. Kind of you've been looking for support there. Has there been any further discussions or any kind of insight you can give into the discussions would be great. And then the final one, just on CapEx. Just on the two different scenarios that you outlined for the kind of regulatory period, I was just wondering, in each scenario, there's obviously quite a big difference between kind of the levels of CapEx spend. I'd just be interested to know kind of what those differences are and does that impact your kind of future traffic forecasts? Thank you.
Fantastic, Paul. A great set of questions. Let me cover the first section, which was around what we've been seeing recently in terms of traffic, and I can pick up on business rates as well, and then have you, perhaps if I can leave you to cover any more detail on business rates and the CapEx point. So in terms of what we've been seeing, traffic was very low until the middle of May when people were allowed to travel again. It was made legal to do so. And our observation is that people are very law-abiding in the UK, and even though they could break the rules, they choose not to. We have seen an uplift in traffic since the Freedom Day, where people can now come back to the UK if they've been doubly vaccinated. And so from a low point early in the year when we would have between 7,000 and 12,000 passengers a day, last weekend, we were up to about 60,000 passengers a day, and that would compare to 2019, where we'd be at about 250,000 passengers. So a good improvement on where we have been, which gives us confidence that when people are allowed to travel, that they will, but still a long way short of where we would want to be. Our assumptions going forward, we haven't really changed the model that we and projections we shared with you earlier. So the key assumption is when we see the United States opening up, and you might remember we assumed that that wouldn't open up until October, and I think all the indications we're getting from the US at the moment is that they are in no hurry to open up unilaterally. However, from the UK point of view, we could open up unilaterally with the United States, and that would be quite a material potential uplift in our passenger numbers, which is what we've seen happen with the EU when they have opened up. So that is a big potential. And I think if we see doubly vaccinated passengers from other countries being allowed to travel, that will lead to quite a big increase in passenger numbers. And if you can think about any travel you might want to do, it's the allowing doubly vaccinated passengers to travel without quarantine that makes a huge difference, particularly for business travelers who just cannot quarantine when they get to the other end. So I think that's the big opportunity. We are trading in line with our forecast, so that really doesn't start to see a significant uplift until we get into September, and assumes we'll have a relatively modest July and August, and that really all depends on countries opening up. But we've got no reason at the moment to change our forecast from what we shared with you. In terms of business rates, we've seen no progress at all with the government allowing airports to recover business rates in the way that they've allowed for other sectors. In fact, what they are doing, because they've had a large number of claims for business rates rebates from companies in many sectors, is that they are changing the regulations retrospectively so that the people can no longer make a claim from the valuation office in the way that they historically would have done. Instead, they're putting aside a pot of money that will be allocated by local councils. And that's a significantly lower amount than would have been available just to pay for the business rate claims. So that doesn't bode well for us getting our business rates that we're entitled to back. And we are pursuing that through the courts to protect our position. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. As ever, we plan for the worst and work to get a better outcome. But it's very disappointing that when you look at the very tough situation UK travel is in, the last sector to come out of the downturn, we've also had the least support of any sector with nothing other than the general furlough, which does itself come to an end at the end of September. So, Javi, do you want to pick up on CapEx and anything else you want to say on business rates?
Yeah, thank you, John, and thank you, Paul, for your question. As John flagged earlier, I think that our revised business plan presents two options where the CA have to choose. One, the biggest difference is where the CA stands in terms of the recovery of the RAP that the shareholders have invested over the last few years. So as you would expect, in a scenario where the CA were not backing the return of the historic RAP, that will create a situation where it would be not logical from a shareholder perspective to invest protecting the service levels that Heathrow has enjoyed until now. So in that scenario, obviously, we will have a much more prudent level of CapEx, which obviously will secure the safety and the security of our operation, but will be significantly less ambitious on service front. So the main difference is between the low CapEx of around 2.5 billion to the high CapEx of around 4.5 billion is areas that impact technology. So it's less ambition in terms of the extension of the transition to new highly technology of scanners across the terminals, is less investment to support passengers with reduced mobility, and also our ambition in terms of automation in 8-7 would be obviously less affordable. Also, we would be able to invest less on areas like the accelerated transition of our Terminal 2 baggage system, which currently is still being served by our old Terminal 1. And also, we will not be able to invest as much as we would like in expanding the potential terminal additional capacity in Terminal 5. Finally, the key program where we will have a significant difference in terms of investment would be our support for a digital retail. So as you can see, Paul, obviously we as responsible management, we will be investing and protecting the safety and the security, but unfortunately, if the situation, if the CA doesn't provide the right economic incentives, we will not be able to continue investing on areas of continue protecting service and technology.
Thank you very much. And just on those two scenarios, is there different traffic forecasts behind kind of each one, or is it a common traffic forecast across the two?
It's roughly the same. Obviously, they are marginally different, and it's more related by the mathematical calculation of potential traffic shocks going forward, but they're roughly the same between both the scenarios.
Yeah. So we're not assuming any material reduction in passenger numbers as a result of the lack of investment in the lower case, and that really just reflects the lead time between investment and the impact on consumers. And we all know how poor Heathrow was from a service point of view 15 years ago as a result of decades of neglect. It's taken us a lot of work and a lot of investment to turn that around, and we're very proud of where we've got to. We don't want to see service at Heathrow go backwards again, and that's why it's important that we at least maintain investment levels in line with depreciation. But that all depends on the CAA incentivizing investment.
Great. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of James Sparrow at BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, James.
Yes, hi. Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to have a sort of get some sort of comment on sort of logistics if as and when things do start to open up and traffic increases. Just wondered if you could sort of comment a bit on how the vaccine checking pilot is going with the airlines, and what will kind of the role will what will role of e-gates be going forward, and you know, basically, yeah, kind of what the plan is to start processing a lot more passengers when inevitably there will still be some more checks required.
It's a great question, James, and as you know, all countries have introduced a lot of checks that weren't required before, and not all the airlines or those countries' governments themselves have been able to keep their automated systems up to date on what is required. So there's a lot more manual intervention than there used to be, and that just means that transaction times are a lot longer. We see that in check-in, where for some airlines the transaction time per person or per party has gone from a minute or two to 10 to 15 minutes, and that can cause a significant congestion. Equally, we can see airlines such as British Airways and Virgin have got ahead of the game and started to automate those steps so that a lot of the checks that you need to do can be done at home, and that minimizes the transaction times at the airport. And I think that as governments standardize some of the steps that they need and airlines catch up with their systems, in a few months' time, we'll see that kind of that congestion starting to diminish, and that in itself will help to encourage people to travel. Now, in terms of Border Force, they've actually put some very good measures in place that I don't think other countries have done. So they have automated the passenger locator form so that when you fill out your passenger locator form and you fill in all the checks for tests that you've carried out or tests that you've booked, that is all linked into your passport. So that when you get to an e-gate in the Heathrow Immigration Hall, you just scan your passport, and that will check your passenger locator form automatically. And that has massively speeded up the journey through the airport. Now, they've had a few teething issues with the technology, and we had some of that last weekend, which contributed to longer queues. But when it's working, it's a very good step forward. With the double vaccination pilot, if you're a UK resident, it's relatively easy to connect the NHSX app into that passenger locator form process. What we've been doing with our pilots is to demonstrate that extending the double vaccination exemption to amber countries in the EU and the United States can be managed without the need to fully automate the whole system. And we can do that because the checks can be carried out by ground staff at check-in in the outstation, and then we only need spot checks at the border at Heathrow. And that will allow us to increase the number of people coming in without causing congestion in the immigration area. And we've completed that pilot. It went very well. We've demonstrated that whether people are coming in with a CDC card to demonstrate they've been doubly vaccinated, or if they have a digital app, as the EU and some parts of the United States have, we can validate them at check-in and allow people to travel cleanly. And we've submitted that evidence to government, and I hope that that will encourage them to open up quarantine-free travel to the EU and the US and to other countries by the end of this month. But you're absolutely right. The more that we can take away some of the checks from the airport, the easier it will be to get back to frictionless travel.
John, I think if I can add just one thing on James on follow-up. Obviously, on the cost side, we have built some extra cost in our second part of the year. So obviously, if you just focus on our actuals for the first half and you were doubling that for the entire year, is £120 million less than what we published in our investor report. And I believe that hopefully gives you assurance that we have built extra cost in the second part of the year to ensure that we are supporting growth as adequately.
Yeah, no, thanks. That's really helpful. And then maybe just to follow up, it does seem like there is a kind of route to more frictionless travel here. From what I recall, and it might be just because I'm wrong, the originally, I think, John, you were thinking the e-gates wouldn't actually start to be able to be used properly until September. So has that kind of rollout been quicker than expected?
Well, we had expected that the rollout wouldn't be complete until the end of October. Actually, they are a little bit ahead of schedule. So we have, I think, 15 upgraded e-gates in Terminal 5. I think we've got 5 and 10 in T2 and T3. So they are getting on with that upgrade program, and they've also upgraded the manual desks as well so that they can carry out a lot of these checks automatically there. And funny enough, I had a complaint from a passenger the other day saying, how come I had no checks of my passenger locator form when I arrived at Heathrow? The border is porous. I was through immigration within a minute. This is outrageous. and it was fantastic to be able to say, actually, that is because the system is working. And when it works well, we are getting back to the kind of quick journey through Heathrow that you would have been used to 18 months ago.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Once again, if there are any further questions, if you're dialed in on your phone, please dial 01, or if you're using the WebEx audio, please use the raise hand button to the right of your name on the WebEx screen. And we have a few more questions coming through on the phones. The first is from the line of Alessandro Lascalia of BlackRock. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Alessandro.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for taking my question and for today's presentation. I have one, actually, again, on your revised business plan or plans, we should say, yes, there are a couple of options. First, could you remind us what is, let's say, a normalized average aeronautical charge level, let's say, in a pre-COVID world, also for having, let's say, a good comparison to these two numbers that you have disclosed today? And the second one is, in both cases, how do you think you can enforce these charges levels to airlines, also considering from where they were? I'm just asking a question essentially about affordability of these levels and whether they are only, let's say, theoretical till we see an actual recovery in traffic and in airlines performance. Thanks.
Great. No, it's a very good question and one that we think about a lot. In simple terms, the equivalent area charge currently is about £20. So we're in round numbers, we're looking at £20, £30, and £40. Now, those are significant increases if you just look at that part of the cost equation. But, of course, that is a relatively small part of the overall ticket price, depending on what kind of flight you are taking. And when we talk about £20 today, that's actually made up of a landing charge element, which is paid on a per plane basis. And then there's a consumer element, and that differs depending on whether you're traveling long haul or short haul, whether you're connecting. So this doesn't directly translate into a £20 charge to all passengers. Actually, the charge for domestic and transfer passengers is very low, and very competitive, actually lower than some of the other London airports. So the charges differ a little bit by the ability to pay. Now, currently, of course, the people who are traveling are traveling because they really want to travel, and they're prepared to pay hundreds of pounds for the tests that you have to take either to get into another country or into the UK. And so in that context, an additional £10 is a relatively modest amount in the context of the overall journey that people are going on. So I'm not suggesting for a moment it is insignificant, but I think we have to look at it in context of the fact that people are prepared to pay quite a lot to be able to travel at this point. And of course, as traffic numbers improve, then the opportunity for prices to start coming down again comes in, because we'll have more passenger numbers to spread the cost burden across. Now, in terms of value for money, I think the facts speak for themselves here. When you look at the value that airlines get from operating out of Heathrow, as evidenced by the airline's ability to sell pairs of slots at Heathrow for $75 million a pair, that shows there is a huge consumer surplus at Heathrow, which is captured by the airlines and not by the airport. And so some of the additional charge of using the airport can be passed on to consumers without necessarily going into the ticket price. And that's a benefit that the airlines have been able to enjoy during the good times. But in these difficult times, when we need to fund the airport assets that airlines are using, then we need to be able to recover more money to be able to cover those costs. So we want Heathrow to be as competitive as we can. But all the evidence that we have seen shows that certainly these kinds of charges are affordable in the current and future environment.
Thanks. Is the implication of that that you are essentially not going to negotiate down the status with airlines? I mean, you're going to try and enforce them to the level that the regulator is going to calculate, essentially based on your CapEx and plan assumptions anyways?
Well, that's what we've always done in the past. Although in recent times we have put in an incentive for growth with airlines, which has been very well received by the airlines, and so that it is a win-win. And of course, the more passengers we can get back quicker, the lower the charge that we'd need to levy in any event. So there is a win-win here. And one of the options that the CAA is looking at, which they've mentioned in their Way Forward document, is effectively having some kind of a risk share mechanism, which would have the equivalent effect. So it's a very sensible thing to do, given that there is a huge amount of uncertainty about traffic numbers. But what is certain is that it's in all of our interest to get as many passengers back using Heathrow as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alessandro.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Miguel Molina of Alamanix. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. Two questions.
Hi.
The first one is on the abolition of VAT in the UK. Have there been any news on the legal legal challenge that you launched jointly with World Duty Free and the VAT people? That's the first question. And then the second question is going back again to the revised business plan. I believe that even under the first scenario, the one that is the most positive for Heathrow, you have slightly changed the term from what you presented in December 2020. There is a small decrease in the estimate of passengers for age 7. I think it's around 2, 3, 4%. But on the other hand, there is a very significant increase in the CapEx of around 20%. What is the reason for that? Thank you very much.
Good. Great. Well, both good questions. In terms of VAT legal challenge, we were unsuccessful with that legal challenge, so that's now gone through. as having said, it's a missed opportunity and puts the UK at a competitive disadvantage and actually puts more pressure on the kind of numbers that we're looking at in the revised business plan, because we are unlikely to be able to achieve the same level of commercial income that we otherwise have done. And that means that there is less cross-subsidy that goes to reduce aeronautical charges. So it's one of the many pressures that we are trying to work with as we plan a competitive airport going forward. In terms of the RPP, you're absolutely right that we're looking at a lower set of passenger numbers and a higher level of capital spend. And the reason for that is really that the crisis has gone on for longer than we were expected when we put the initial proposals together back in, submitted in December of last year. So as you will have seen, we've reduced our forecast for 2021, and therefore we're expecting that the it'll take us longer to recover within 2022 and 2023. And so that explains the reduction in passenger numbers that you're seeing. Equally, we would have expected to have started investing in core maintenance of the airport earlier. Instead, we've had to maintain very low levels of investment for longer during 2021. And that means there's a lot of catch-up capital spend just to maintain the infrastructure of the airport, the equipment, the gates, the stands, and the fire mains. And that's effectively maintenance that has been put off, but you can't put it off indefinitely. And so we're going to have to do some catch-up within the H7 period to make sure we can maintain a safe and resilient operation. We've added in several hundred million pounds of additional spend for that to make up for the shortfall within 2021. I hope that clarifies your question, but you're clearly very sharp on the numbers.
Well, I'm not sure about that. Thank you very much, and congratulations to Javier. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if there are any further questions, either dial 01 on your telephone keypads or use the raise hand button on the WebEx screen. There will be a brief pause now whilst we register any further questions. Okay, there seem to be no further questions, so I'll hand back to our speakers.
Well, fantastic. And I really just want to close by saying thank you so much for your support. The support of all of our investors, debt and equity, in the last 18 months has been really critical to getting us through this, and we're grateful for your confidence in us. And this is why when we look at the business plan for H7, it's so important that the CAA really focuses on investability to make sure that we continue to be a safe place for your money and that we incentivize investment in developing the airport to be as good as it can be. I do think we have moved out of the worst of this crisis and we're now investing for recovery, and the quicker we can get passengers back, the better. And that's where a lot of our time is going at the moment. We have some important arrivals coming up. Most importantly, of course, is for the businesses, our customers, but perhaps most important personally is Javier's little arrival, who we hope will also arrive safe and well. We wish him and his family the very best over the next few months. But I hope you can see that while Javier is away, we're in good hands. But most of all, your investment is in good hands, and that we are prudently managing Heathrow, looking to the long term, and making sure that we get back to our best as fast as we can. Thank you.
This now concludes the conference. Thank you all very much for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.